It's time for Twig This Week in Google. Last day before the net neutrality vote. We'll talk a little bit about that. We have some new apps from Google, a new camera app that's really sweet, and a couple of they're kind of silly. And we'll unbox something big and heavy from Google.
By the way, the Google Home is upside down. It will work best if you turn it over.
Oh, This Week in Google, next.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for This Week in Google is provided by Cachefly. CacheFly.com. This is Twig, This Week in Google, episode 435, recorded Wednesday, December 13th, 2017. Worst queso scenario. This Week in Google is brought to you by VideoBlocks from Storyblocks. Get all the high-quality stock video, audio, and images you can imagine for just $149 a year. Go to videoblocks.com/twig today. And by Sonic, Twig's 10 gigabit fiber internet service provider. Join Sonic's internet revolution as they bring fast, affordable internet, phone, and TV to homes and businesses all over California. Visit sonic.com/twit to sign up for service and receive your first month free. And by the Ring Video Doorbell. With Ring, you can see and talk to anyone at your door from anywhere in the world using your smartphone. It's like caller ID for your home. Go to ring.com/twig and get up to $150 off a Ring of Security kit. It's time for Twig, This Week in Google, show where we talk about really much more than Google. Everything going on in the world around us, Facebook, Google, Amazon, Microsoft, not so much Microsoft, Apple, not so much Apple. Jeff Jarvis is here, professor of journalism at the City University of New York, blogger at BuzzMachine.com, author of so many great books, including What Would Google Do?
You know what I'm doing?
Public Parts. You're poking me.
I'm poking. Poking's back.
Is the poke back? Oh, say it ain't so. Oh, Lord. Well, we'll talk about that in a second, because I got to introduce our other partner here, is partner in crime, as it were, Stacey Higginbotham. She's the host of Stacey on IoT, a great podcast with Kevin Toefel and the Stacey on IoT a newsletter, and you can find all her work at StaceyOnIoT.com. Hello, Stacey. Boy, you look festive today.
Oh, I think I put lipstick on. Woo!
Yeah, but I think the lace, and, you know, you're kind of in a white room, and I just,
there's an elegance.
There's this, yes. She's got elegance. Oh, she, I'm now singing songs from Hello, Dolly all
day. I was going to say, that means we can't talk about queso.
You ain't got, no queso. No queso. Tomorrow is the day. You know, I haven't talked a whole lot about net neutrality. I've seen protests on the net. Reddit, when you go to Reddit, has a big thing, and a few other sites put up a don't forget to call your Congress critter and all that. I feel like it's over because there's no way, no matter what we do, we already got more than a million comments in favor of net neutrality, and the FCC just goes, yeah, right, never mind. Who cares what you think?
Not only do we have all these comments in favor of keeping net neutrality, we also have evidence of fraud that they're like, we don't care.
We don't care. They literally don't care. And incidentally, just to add insult to injury, because remember, one of the things the FCC will do probably tomorrow is hand over all enforcement of net neutrality, a job it really should be its job, Federal Communications Commission, to the Federal Trade Commission.
and then the FTC says, what?
Yeah. Huh? Federal Trade Commissioner Terrell McSweeney has repeatedly warned that her organization is not able to do the job. She actually wrote an article and says, quote, the FTC does not have specialized expertise in telecommunications. Well, duh. We don't have engineers with technical experience in data network management practices. We don't even have jurisdiction over common carriers. These are very real and significant limits to the effectiveness of our tools, ensuring that networks are open and free of harmful discrimination. Which would explain to me exactly why Ajit Pai wants to give it to the FTC. There will be no enforcement.
Be none. Right.
You know, the thing about this purely... is that...
Oh. Go ahead, Stacey.
I was going to say it'll be purely deceptive trade practices, anti-competitive, and those things are hard to prove. And even under net neutrality, there was a method for carrier people to call that in and fight that. And it takes a long time. This is just...
Oh, it's frustrating. Canada has gotten into the act. Apparently, a Canadian government official said that net neutrality has become an issue in the NAFTA negotiations, or it isn't really the NAFTA negotiations, but the negotiations over the replacement for the North America Free Trade
Negotiations. Yeah.
Yeah, the Trump negotiations. Canada's lead NAFTA negotiator, Steve Verhol, said to a parliamentary committee this week, "We're including provisions like online consumer protection to ensure that it's provided for. And then we also have provisions to provide personal information protection, which we feel is essential in this kind of trade, along with our position that we want to protect net neutrality when it comes to digital trade." He says the U.S. negotiating team is focused on trying to get Canada to accept our version of intermediary protections online, where ISPs and third parties like Facebook cannot be held legally responsible for the behavior of their customers. But Canadians prefer to leave the issue to the courts and out of a trade agreement. He says, Verhol says, U.S. negotiating team has not reacted positively to the Canadian pushback on net neutrality.
All right, let me say a couple things, if I may.
Yes, man.
One, University of Maryland poll out, I think yesterday, said that 83% of Americans are in favor of keeping net neutrality. So this is by no means a political decision. Just like the tax bill, I would argue, but especially here, the people don't want the 79% of Republicans want to keep net neutrality. This is an oligopoly. This is big companies ruling the country. And I'm sounding like I'm, you know, Bernie. I'm not. I'm a middle of the road guy in so many ways. But this is an indication of undemocratic governance. Point one. Point two. Ajit Pai is saying he has absolutely zero. He's not consistent in any way in his philosophy. He doesn't have any philosophy. So just like on the one hand, the government is saying, no CNN merger, but go ahead, Tribune buy Trunk. In this case, Ajit Pai is saying the phone companies and the ISPs should be able to do whatever they want, whatever the heck they want, that's fine. However, then he turns around the next breath and he told Tucker Carlson last night that there ought to be a law, an investigation or something, stopping Facebook and Google from disadvantaging conservative content. Uh-huh. Well, free speech is includes the right to edit, includes the right to say what's hate speech and not to have that on your platform. But that's the meme that's being put out there. And there's no consistency in any way between those two things.
A guy named Jeff Jarvis on MSNBC said it all. He said, this is all about enabling the oligopoly of cable and the telephone to control the net.
See a tie.
Yeah.
A tie. Look for those of you listening, I have a tie.
He's wearing a black suit and tie.
And you look much nicer.
You dress up for Stephanie Ruhle. You say, yeah. Yeah, well, Stephanie. Yeah. By the way, she calls you one of her favorites.
I think it was.
One of our faves. I almost don't want to bring this up because I don't think we can influence the vote at this point. I don't think there's much we can do about it. What should we do?
You could call your Congress critter.
And should.
You could. And should. Because there was a Republican congressman who came out against it. So there's a couple things. After this vote repeals it, then the process will happen again. We could have a lawsuit. We could find another case. You can also expect... I mean, it's possible that it's a shame no one got Trump upset over this. And so Trump could tweet, I want the net to stay free. Because then, Ajit Pai would have to go around. There's not a lot to do.
No, but you can do what the internet pioneers did. They wrote a letter.
Scathing letter.
Scathing letter to members of the House and the Senate. We are writing to respectfully urge you to call on FCC Chairman Ajit Pai to cancel the December 14th vote. We are the pioneers and technologists who created and now operate the internet, including Vince Cerf, Steve Wozniak, Paul Vixie, Stephen Wolf, Ron Rivest. I mean, these are names you all know. Ted Nelson, Susan Landau, Brewster Kahle. These are the Whitfield Diffie. Vinton Cerf, the father of the internet, Tim Berners-Lee, the creator of the World Wide Web, Steve Belovin, who tweeted
yesterday that net neutrality is what enabled him to invent the web. He needed a permissionless environment.
Thank you. So people who say, oh, you guys are out of touch, you know, we don't need net neutrality, we don't want more government regulation. Okay, don't believe us. But do you believe the people who invented and run today's internet? Do you believe them? Because they seem unanimous. This is a list of who's who.
Boy, is it.
Unanimous in their contempt for what is happening tomorrow.
Contempt is a good word, because that's exactly how Ajit Pai is reacting by moving forward with this vote.
He has contempt for us, for the people, for 86% who said we want net neutrality, for the creators and pioneers and people who run the internet. Complete and utter contempt. All he cares about is lining the pockets of the telcos and the ISPs, the big guys.
And he also has a contempt for the facts, in the sense that he says this isn't a problem when it's actually been a documented problem. I'm just so baffled that this is actually going forward. And yes.
Yeah, and as Stephanie Rule said today to me, it's not, you know, the violations are not going to come quickly. They're going to come slowly. I said at the end of the show, I'm a frog and it's getting a little warm in here.
Yeah.
It's going to happen in subtle ways.
It's already happening if you look at things like zero rating.
Zero rating.
Zero rating is a net neutrality. It's just a friendly one.
Right.
And now in the coming years, we're going to see unfriendly ones, or we're going to see, I mean, we already see, if you think about things like data caps, when that began all the way back in 2008 with Time Warner saying, hey, maybe we shouldn't have all you can eat broadband. That was the beginning of the data cap efforts. And that very slowly over the next 4 years before Comcast kind of instituted theirs happened. And the carriers are playing a long game here, because right now they're the only ones with this asset.
Yeah. Well,
so Stacey, you mentioned a suit. Is there any scenario in which you can imagine a temporary restraining order on this, or anyone withstanding?
I don't think it's a repeal of rules. So I don't think you can sue over the repeal. You would have to find a violation or something and sue over that. Like, you can sue there was a lawsuit happening, and there's currently a lawsuit about the comments, but I don't think.
Yeah, Eric Schneiderman in New York State is suing.
I don't see that as.
He found a huge number of fake comments.
What was it?
The
2
FCC
million?
Wouldn't hand them over. What was it? 2 million.
2 million fake accounts.
By the way, you could also go to a site and see whether, because identities were stolen. So you can go and look up your name and see if your identity was stolen for a fake comment to the FCC.
Did we do that last week? Yeah, you weren't here, Jeff, but we did that last week.
Oh, I see. Okay. Yeah.
Which, I think identity theft, isn't that an FTC issue? Congress, someone correctly pointed this out in the comments, that Congress could make laws enshrining net neutrality or some variation of that.
Yeah, FCC only does what Congress says it can do. And
but here's the problem with that.
What, Congress?
101 million in donations from the ISP industry. Yeah, I looked up. I have two Democratic senators. Cory Booker got $290,000.
Oh,
Robert Menendez got $700,000 from ISPs. My congressman got $290,000.
Do you think really that the thing we should be doing, Larry Lessig just thinks this, the thing we should do is forget all these battles, these short-term battles, and go for the big one, which is to change how elections are funded, to get money out of politics.
If we don't you remember the campaign finance reform bill that didn't pass?
Oh, yeah,
that was a bipartisan effort.
You can't have the people who benefit from this voting against it. They're not going to do it. It's the same thing.
Talking about a coup.
It's the same problem as gerrymandering. You know, if you have the people who are going to benefit doing the gerrymandering, of course you're going to do it to their benefit. Sometimes I despair of our republic. Comcast, by the way,
sometimes,
is already injecting.
Sometimes,
many times. Comcast. No, not always though. You know what? There's some. If there's anything that's positive in this, is we're seeing our institutions, chiefly the courts, because Congress is useless, but some members of Congress, and then definitely the courts, holding the line, trying to preserve our republic. And I hope that they continue to do so, because if they get eroded, if all the institutions get eroded that are protecting us right now,
then we've moved into a straight-up African kleptocracy. And, I feel like we're kind of there.
We're getting close.
Oh, yeah.
We're getting close. Comcast, if you think Comcast, oh, no, they're nice. They're nice ISP. For years, they've been injecting code into your websites, 400 lines of code to let you know you need a new modem that you don't even need. I see this all the time. I'm a Comcast customer at home.
You do see it all the time.
Yeah. It's easy to fix. And I think what we will do as a network going forward, because we're talking to technologically literate folks, is show you how you can prevent your ISP from snooping on you, from injecting code into your websites. It's not that hard. You can do it with routers and plugins and things. And I guess we're just going to have to start the resistance how to keep your internet free.
Oh my gosh, it's like Homeland. No, what's it like? No. Little Brother. It's like Little Brother.
Little Brother. Cory Doctorow is a good friend. It's very much like Little Brother. Cory saw this coming years ago.
Did you see the new Homeland?
No.
Trailer?
No. I fell behind. I haven't seen anything since the fourth season.
Really?
Yeah, and I hear it got very good, and I just, Lisa and I have to catch up.
I didn't mean to.
All right, that's net neutrality in a nutshell. It sucks.
Yeah, depressing way to end the year.
And you should stay in touch with your member of Congress. The thing I do want to remind everybody is maybe we can't get the influence of money out of Congress, but what does money buy? It really, in most cases, unless your congressperson is completely corrupt, which some are, it doesn't buy them a new home or a nice boat. It buys them votes. It goes into their campaigns. Yes. And who ultimately controls the votes? We do. So we do control the levers of power. And we just need to make sure that we get our voices heard, because ultimately, the only thing that speaks louder than the money being poured into Congress right now is our voices as voters. So
why wasn't there a SOPA people level Silicon Valley fight this time?
A lot of the big tech companies were not as
upset. They had mixed feelings about this, didn't they?
Yeah.
Because ultimately, they are incumbents and they do benefit. Incumbents benefit from this. Which is why it's really stupid of Ajit Pai to go after Twitter and Google, because they're natural allies of his. But he's not smart enough to really understand what's going on, I don't think. Hey, good news for donors. Patreon has backed down on its...
You know, Jack Conte, if he should just be in charge of Silicon Valley. He just seems like the most decent.
I love Jack.
Guy, he listens. He listens.
We met him.
He messed up
when he and Natalie were Pamplemousse on. You know, the great. They performed for us several times in our studio, and I knew when he started Patreon, and I know he did it for the best of intents, because he himself was an artist and he wanted to support other artists, and it's really been a boon for a lot of creators in a lot of different fields, but especially podcasters. Then you remember last week they decided to kind of flip how Patreon works. In the past, credit card service fees were paid by the creator, not the patron. They flipped it on its head, which meant that in many cases, a dollar donated to a creator would end up costing you $1.50 in additional charges. The credit card fees, like 2.9% plus a 35 cent per donation charge. People howled, and it hurt creators. A lot of people canceled their subscriptions. Well, Jack has listened, and he has published a blog post. He's explained, I think he's explained well what he says. We messed up. We're sorry, and we're not rolling out the fees change. But he did need to explain what was going on. But he says it was poorly planned, because it disproportionately affected the $1 and $2 patrons. So they're
which is true of the entire credit card billing system we have.
Yes,
that's why everyone who's dreamed of micropayments, they do not work economically.
Yeah,
they just simply don't. And psychologically, I don't think they also work, but economically, they just can't be made to work.
Right,
and it's just a reality of the structure that's above him.
And I know a lot of people have tried to create a micropayment scheme that works. I think 20 years ago, we knew that the net at things like journalism on the net would require something that would allow a person to say, I'll give you a penny to read that article or a nickel to read that article.
But never happened.
It never happened. And it's because the financial institutions want to charge those large fees.
There are efforts now to say, well, Bitcoin, we'll use Bitcoin because Bitcoin is the gravy that will make any bad meal, of course, taste good.
Right.
So it's not Bitcoin per se. It's a blockchain-based, like, digital contract kind of situation. And that actually, so...
But I have to point out the transaction fees for Bitcoin far exceed that of Visa and MasterCard.
Right. But if you create this is blockchain versus Bitcoin. So yeah. If you create a digital ledger, monitoring of transactions, you could create something like this where you could either aggregate wide micropayments and then cash them out at the end.
Maybe. I mean, I think the reason that Bitcoin's transactions have gotten... They're $20 and more now, is it's kind of in the nature of blockchain. You have to give people an incentive to handle those transactions because there's no central bank. And it turns out people are just as greedy as central banks. They're not going to handle those transactions unless they get something for it. And so blockchain, you're right. I think the key, you actually nailed it, Stacey. The key is not blockchain, but the key is aggregating micropayments. That's what Apple does. Apple doesn't charge your credit card till you buy enough stuff. But we need some sort of aggregation system. But people want to get paid for their work, even if it's just Bitcoin mining.
That'd be an interesting role for journalism. So a newspaper creating or a blog creating an aggregation platform that can fund, you know, the ability to grab all those payments and then distribute them.
There's a new startup called Civic. Have you heard of this, Stacey?
No.
I think it's called Civic.
I don't know a lot about journalism, despite being a journalist.
That's, I think, common. It's only us people who observe journalists that know anything about journalism.
All right. Boys, I always left that
Civil,
up to Matthew.
Civil. Joincivil.com. Somebody I work with is enthusiastic. I'm a little dubious just because I think there's a high level of complication here. And they also think that it'll have, but anyway, I'm going off on a tangent here. I think that Jack did what he did for sensible reasons, but he listened quickly, and I think you have to give him a lot of credit for that.
And in a way, Jack's big mistake was taking investments. Once you take venture capital, the goal of the game changes. And
I'm having that argument with people like Jay Rosen and others that. The VC is presumed bad when it comes to journalism, too. Well, Axios got a big investment, and I tweeted, yay, good for them. People just came after me all over. Oh, no, that's terrible. That's terrible. Venture capital money. I said, no, investing in journalism is a good thing. Yes,
but
you have bad
they're
investors.
They have a return structure that is problematic for journalism. I can, as someone who was inside a journalism startup that took a lot of venture funding, had to come up with a model that met the hockey stick.
It killed GigaOm.
That's it killed us.
You see,
Pando
new models.
Wasn't Pando Sarah Lacey's startup all based on investment?
It was. Now, and Jeff, I would say no. We actually did several new models at GigaOm. The research model we pioneered was very new and was actually... an example for the rest of the industry. The challenge is running those things at, and there were other challenges associated with GigaOm, starting with, you know, crazy salaries for our sales staff and some accounting issues around the research product. But at the end of the day, journalism doesn't pay.
Uh-oh.
And we had journalism.
This is the year of journalism. If journalism doesn't pay in 2017, it's never going to pay. Would you agree to that, Jeff?
No. I think it's early days. I think we're still an inefficient industry. Just yesterday, I had a meeting of the top 20 people who were trying.
So you disagree with Stacey. You think journalism can pay?
Yes. That's what I devote my career to now.
What are you saying?
But the economics
then?
Are going to be very different. It's going to be much smaller and multiple revenue streams. And I don't think we've begun to reinvent the notion of what journalism is in this age. We are still what we're trying to make pay is pay us for what we used to do 100 years ago. Pay us for making articles. Journalism, that's journalism as factory, not journalism as service. Now, so for example, I had in 20 people at CUNY. We started a community of practice around commerce because I think it's an area that ought to be explored for its own, for the revenue, also because it pushes us to do user profiling, which I think is an important strategic effort. And I've also learned in talking to these people, the thing about commerce that's really interesting is that trust matters greatly. It matters more than ad support. Because if you lie to your readers about a deal, they're going to be away in a second. So I heard the word trust constantly around the room. So that's one. That's not salvation. It's one of many revenue streams. And you're right, Stacey. GigaOma tried. Maybe it was too early. But my point back to the VCs is their expectation is set only on a volume-based business. And we have to give them new models in which they invest. And we still need their investment. We don't have the cash to start stuff, and we can't just do things as mom and pops.
So I would say that your thought about trust is absolutely correct. And at GigaOM, what we're banking on is the trust that our readers had in the reporters. And because of that, they could sell all these other things. So like the challenge was, as one of those trusted people, I couldn't scale. My trust didn't scale to the venture levels, right? So we had three different revenue streams, but I couldn't participate in all of them and stay sane. Mm-hmm. And that was ultimately the challenge. And I'll be honest, there's my dog. She totally agrees, by the way.
She agrees. She completely says. She said what Stacey says.
There's only a few Stacey Higginbothams in the world. There's only a few, you know, Gig or O'Malleks and Jeff Jarvises and Leo Laportes. And
you're absolutely right. But call up, if you would, the Jonah Peretti email.
Oh, the BuzzFeed. Well, actually, let's take a break. I want to take a break.
Wait. I interrupted Stacey. Stacey, I was going to ask you your reaction to his matrix for just that reason.
Oh, God. Wait, go to break so I can read this.
Okay.
So he put out a letter saying that there have been some serious challenges and the media is in crisis, but he believes that the diversified model that BuzzFeed uses is going to ultimately work.
So first, I interrupted.
I like what you said, Stacey, though. I loved what you said, which is that trust is the gold coin. Trust is trust is what you can sell. But you have to be very careful not to damage that trust. And for any enterprise to succeed, it has to continue to build new reporters like Ohm and you and build trust.
In the fast-paced world of online journalism, I mean, like, I hired a bunch of people at GigaOM. And we tried both hiring experts, and that was easy. And then we tried hiring people and developing them. And the type of journalism that we did was not conducive to letting people learn on the job because of that trust.
So. Yeah. Trust and expertise. So, Stacey, let me understand what you're saying. When you say you didn't scale, that basically it was about selling your relationship.
It wasn't selling my relationship. It was people came to me because they said in my particular niche, and there were other people who were good at other things. People came to me because they were like, I know what's going on. I have a worldview that I can explain and articulate that so far seems to map to money-making opportunities. Because again, we didn't sell to the mainstream, or we didn't write to the mainstream. And then from that, they would say, okay, Stacey, in addition to all the articles you write that we give away for free to monetize that, we would like you to plan a conference. So then I would plan a conference. And in a sense, I'm monetizing my relationships because I would call people I know and we would put on a show. Now, we did not do pay to play for the conferences, because if they had, both Ohm would have said no, I would have said no. I mean, none of us were all like old school that way. So in a sense, that may have been our failing. But again, that was important for the trust. So you knew if I developed a conference, you'd actually see really cool people talking about really crazy cool things, because that's what Stacey does.
Interesting. We face very similar challenges, Stacey. I don't think we could have survived, could have survived had we taken venture capital. It's a very fragile thing. And when economic pressures get too high, look what happened to poor Jack Conte. He's lost considerable amounts of trust because of this. And all he was doing was, I'm sure, acceding to the pressures of a board trying to turn some profit, because they're valued at so much higher than their you know, they make $8 million a year. They're valued at hundreds of millions. So I think I would argue VC is a bad thing. Jeff, can you give me an example of a journalistic enterprise that's taken VC money that's thriving?
Well, you got two questions wrapped up in that. One is, can you name a journalistic enterprise that's thriving?
Well,
Texas Tribune. So
I would say the Washington Post, with the patronage of Jeff Bezos, is doing quite well. But Jeff is clearly not the kind of investor who's saying, and I got to see some profit right now.
No, that's true. And the problem with that is, and I agree, and God bless, I wish Jeff Bezos would buy some more things. And he's turning out to be a very responsible owner. But there's a fine line between benefactor and oligarch.
Oh, right,
where I was in Ukraine, I saw a lot of oligarchs. And so this notion of having somebody control the place, or Sam Zell in L.A., or and on and on and on. So the benefactor as owner depends greatly. And then at some point you give up. You know, don't forget the Grahams
were probably not benefactors a model
for many years.
It's probably not a
model. So but there's that first. So the first question is, it's hard to judge venture-backed media companies apart from the entire media industry. The entire media industry is what I was trying to say badly. Hasn't yet found and perfected the models in the mix. We're still in the experimentation stage. And unfortunately, Stacey, you suffered the scars of that.
Right.
But the lessons that you learned and taught, I think, will keep paying off for others as time goes on.
You're the cautionary tale.
But, well, no, I'm also, I mean, like, when I started my own business, I did it with an eye to never taking outside investment, even though that was scary.
You and I did the same thing, Stacey.
Yeah.
We learned a lesson.
But you're scaling right now. I'm like, eh.
I'm kind of hovering. I don't think we're going. Our revenues were off about 10% from last year. Our profits weren't because we canceled shows and laid off people. So I wouldn't say that we are. Now there's other things in play here, like the growth of the podcast pool and people's attention being distracted by other things and so forth. But I would say if I had economic pressure from the outside, we wouldn't be able to survive that. We'd have to sell out, basically. We'd have to sell that trust. We'd have to sell it. So if you say that you have trust and you could play on your trust, you could sell it, but you can only sell it to a certain degree before it starts to diminish. For instance, we do a lot of ads, right? That diminishes trust a little bit, but those ads are valuable because of the trust that we have created with our audience.
Yes.
We have to monetize, so we have to sell a little bit of that trust off. The trick is to not sell so much that it diminishes.
Yes, that's true. So, Stacey, Ohm then became a VC.
Ohm was a VC beforehand. Ohm actually was a VC starting sometime in the middle of GigaOm.
Yes.
Because he had deal flow.
He did.
It's all about the deal flow, baby.
It's not just deal flow. He did have a very cogent and good worldview that, you know, VCs love that.
Yeah.
VCs love any man with a worldview.
Yeah.
Emphasis on man.
Let's take a little break. I do want to say, though, one more thing, which is I mentioned the institutions that are saving this republic right now. And frankly, front and center foremost is the fourth estate, is journalism. If it weren't for the integrity and the assiduity and the careful work of journalists, I think we'd be in a hell of a lot worse.
Well, given the story of this week, Washington Post did amazing work around Moore.
Right, Moore. We would be in a lot worse shape. So that's one of the institutions. I mentioned courts, but really, I think it's frankly the fourth estate that's keeping us afloat at this point. It's keeping us a republic. And of course, there's no surprise. That's the first thing authoritarians shut down, whether it's Putin or Hitler or whoever. That's the first thing they shut down. The lying press, Hitler called them.
Yeah, is it 20%, 19% of Republicans believe that, or only 19% of Republicans trust the news now? This was a crazy stat.
That's
sad.
Is
it the Pew poll?
But the news doesn't agree with their worldview. Why would they trust it? They've been told over and over again, too. That's the other problem.
No, I know.
Yeah. I'm going to change the subject. We're going to take a break. We will talk about Jonah Peretti's memo, and which came out today. And then I have an unboxing. It's something you would like to find on your tree because it's big. We all like bigger gifts, right? Big is Except,
No.
Jewelry is little,
small
isn't it?
Gifts. Small,
something
sparkly
in a light blue box. That might be better. But this is not that. This is a big, heavy box. We're going to take a look. We're going to open it up in a little bit. Our show today brought to you by, this is a gift. Video blocks from Storyblocks. This is a gift that keeps giving all year long. Do you use sound effects for your podcasts or video backgrounds on your website? Are you a filmmaker that you need, long shots, helicopter shots, flames? Are your creative needs kind of constrained by budget? Well, you need to know about video blocks from Storyblocks. You get studio quality, high def, stock footage, audio, images, After Effects backgrounds, and more for a price I can't even believe. We've paid so much per month, hundreds of dollars a month for these in the past. Now we're all in on video blocks for $149 a year. A year. Unlimited. And these are royalty free. You can use them for commercial and personal projects. Everything you download is yours to keep and use forever. All the stock media your heart desires, including 150,000 videos, 100,000 audio clips, 400,000 images, After Effects templates, motion backgrounds, and there's new content added all the time, so there's always something fresh. And as a VideoBlocks member, you also get exclusive discounts on over 5 million additional marketplace clips. You're buying directly from the artist, and I love the model here. The artist gets 100% of what you pay. So there's many, many more clips out there, and you get discounts on those. Don't risk the quality of a project due to the high cost of acquiring footage. Go to videoblocks.com. Over 90,000 great businesses have used VideoBlocks, including NBC, National Geographic, the History Channel, the Travel Channel. VideoBlocks.com/twig. Get all the stock footage, audio, and images you can imagine for $149 a year. That's VideoBlocks.com/twig. Save on millions of studio quality stock media from VideoBlocks. And we thank VideoBlocks by StoryBlocks for their support of this week. And Google, Stacey Higginbotham from Stacey on IoT. Mr. Jeff Jarvis from the City University of New York. I love talking about journalism with you guys. You say, Stacey, you don't know anything about journalism, except you are completely an expert.
You are, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know
You're
anybody
reinventing it.
Besides Jeff, who's more expert. And I love it that, Stacey, you had the guts when Giga unfolded. You went to Fortune briefly, but you decided, I'm going to do it myself, and I'm not going to make the same mistakes.
I'm making new, more exciting mistakes.
Well, if you don't make mistakes, you're not learning, right?
That's what I tell myself.
What's the biggest lesson you've learned since you've been on your own?
Only do a newsletter once a week, because anytime more than that, you're really on the hook, especially if you're traveling. And
were you originally like daily?
No, Ohm gave me that advice, and he was so right. Oh, and my other piece of advice is, maybe the last week of the year, just don't sell an ad so you can just not produce something.
Take it easy. Yeah.
It's really hard to produce content that last week.
You know, my advice is surround yourself by smart people like Stacey Higginbotham and Jeff Jarvis, and then you can always coast.
There we go. That's what Kevin's writing a story for me right now.
No, Leo. I when I made .nyc, I thought this is hard. What you do is hard. The art of what you do is you make it look easy, but it's hard.
Thank you. What do you? How is that going, by the way?
Oh, we ran out of money, so that was that.
Oh, you ran out of your grant funds.
It was grants, yeah. So we
didn't. There's only one really hard thing, and that's finding really smart people like Jeff Jarvis and Stacey Higginbotham.
It's true.
I have been extraordinarily fortunate. The team that we've put together is so good, and not just in front of the camera, behind the camera. And that's the voice.
That's key to this.
I'm just selling my trust like nobody's business.
Trust is a blockchain.
I think that's really, I had never really thought about that, Stacey, but that's actually very astute. That is really what you bring to the table. People sometimes call it brand or name awareness. It isn't, though. It really is. People have a relationship with especially in journalism. It's even true in performing arts, but really in journalism, they have a relationship with the journalist, and that's what informs their interest in what the person has to say. And you really have to, and you have to be very careful with it.
And there are still certain people where when something happens, I want to know exactly what a specific person says about it. So
yes.
That is the relationship I want to have with my readers, listeners, anyone. It's hey, crap, this deal just happened. Let's go see what Stacey has. She's usually pretty smart. So,
no, I look at somebody like Marcus Brownlee, who came out of nowhere, created a YouTube following, and it's entirely based on trust. You know, you could include likability and other factors, but ultimately it's trust in what Marcus's reviews are. And he's done it all on his own. Right now he's regretting not surrounding himself with more people because it's exhausting, I'm sure. But he's done it all on his own. And then I wonder if this is true. It does seem like you have to sell a little bit of that trust to monetize.
It's not necessarily selling. If you pick things that you like, I mean, yes, people can dislike ads, but you don't have to add up everything.
Well, we try to preserve trust in that case with our process. Right, exactly. Picking advertisers, rejecting advertisers we don't want to introduce our audience to, and picking ones that we like, and limiting the number of ads and things like that. Yeah.
There are always people who are going to come out. I mean, Kevin and I have encountered this where we're like, someone pings us and is like, I can't believe you wrote that story. They must be advertisers on your show.
Oh,
and we're
all
like,
the time.
They happen not to be, but you know, here's why we think that. And you know, that's just a,
I tweeted headline about, which we'll get to, about T-Mobile buying Level 3 Television and getting into the cable business, which I thought was really interesting, a wireless cable business. And I said, I really like I really like T-Mobile's Moxie. And I immediately got a tweet, how much did they pay you for that?
No.
I can have an opinion. I maybe even have a positive opinion. A number of people tweeted, how can you like T-Mobile with their zero rating? But the world is complicated. And as you get older, you might realize it's not all, you can't just black and white everything, you know?
Right.
It's a complicated world we live in.
Well, but you should acknowledge that, I mean, it is complicated, but if you're going to make compromises, you should recognize what those compromises are and how they can trickle down.
Yes. Yes.
So.
It's a shame that BuzzFeed doesn't spell better, but here is the... The media is in crisis, says Jonah Peretti, and he lays out his vision for a more diversified BuzzFeed, and here's one of the brands. BuzzFeed media brands, Tasty, Nifty, Goodful, etc. I guess unfortunately is not a word that he learned in college. But BuzzFeed has struggled this year, haven't they, Jeff? It has not been an easy year.
Well,
for BuzzFeed.
He argues in there that they didn't so much struggle as they're maturing, and that the expectations were higher, and that he has to experiment with more revenue models. That's what he's really talking about. He was critical of Google and Facebook in there in a way that made the haters gleeful. But I argued on Twitter that he was negotiating. He was saying, because Google and Facebook has paid him for content.
He says that the biggest challenge they face is that, and everybody faces, that Google and Facebook are eating up all the digital ad revenue in the world.
Which is what everybody says. But again, that digital revenue wasn't God-given.
That's true.
Google and Facebook came and offered better deals competitively to our customers. That's the way the capitalistic world works. And we stood behind and we said, no, we want to produce the same product we've always produced, and you should still pay for it, and you should still pay for our audience, even though we don't know anything about them.
How do you compete though with a company, I don't know, like Facebook, I don't know about Google, but how do you compete with a company like Facebook that is getting all those ad dollars because they're willing to completely compromise their users' privacy, invade their privacy in ways that are offensive?
Leo,
I have to give you props for having just a wonderful tone of voice when you ask somebody, how did it feel when you murdered that family of four?
He knows he's baiting me.
Well, what is Zeynep? Okay, I watched Zeynep Tufekci's very good TEDx talk, in which she points out that Facebook wouldn't hesitate to sell an ad to a company, a gambling company, let's say, that wants to reach people who are bipolar in their manic state and therefore more likely to gamble. But by the way, not that Facebook, it's Facebook's problem or the gambling company's problem, to their complete detriment. That's a very valuable kind of thing to sell. And of course, if you can offer that kind of ads buy to a company, you're going to get all the ad dollars. I can't do that. You know, never, and I wouldn't do that. I would never do that, right?
Do you know how the holy, wonderful, sainted newspapers, do you know how they made their money in their earliest days as a mass media product?
How?
Started wars.
Patent medicines.
Yeah, snake oil.
Oh, literally. Absolute lies. Snake oil. Literally snake oil.
sell snake oil. But wait a minute. I am not
I'm
them.
I'm quoting from Bhu Srinivasan's wonderful book. Well, I didn't know this.
I know.
I didn't understand this, right?
Tim Wu also mentions it in The Intention Seekers.
Yeah,
it's really interesting. But that doesn't mean I'm doing that. And how am I to compete?
No, it doesn't mean that
somebody selling snake oil.
Possible.
I admit, by the way, we have a hard time competing against companies that are willing to sell crap products because I won't take those ads. But it's worse if a company is willing to trade on what it knows about its users in ways that I find offensive. Ooh.
Well,
think Facebook doesn't do that? Am I wrong?
Yeah, I don't think they do that. And I think that here's the problem with that line of talk.
And Zeynep's wrong. She says ProPublica was able to buy ads that way.
Well, that's another story.
So I believe Facebook wouldn't maliciously do it, but they probably, I mean, they have the capabilities to identify people at their
most
vulnerable.
They don't label it that way. They label it sentiment analysis.
Someone is coming along and using the capability of the platform they created to do something that Facebook may not have anticipated, like rubles buying political ads. So they've got, and they have to have a more moral structure built in to that architecture. I agree with that. But I also, here's the problem, Leo. I argue strenuously that media companies have to know more about their users. And that's the only path to gain trust in the long run, giving them relevance and value, gaining greater value and surviving.
Wait a minute. I want to stop you right there. Media companies, in order to survive, have to know more about their users I need to know more about my users so I can serve them better or so that I can sell against them better.
Both.
I would agree, serve them better. I would not agree, sell them better.
But it follows. It just naturally follows. If I know you're a parent and I give you a product for parents, and I can then get higher value advertising, I can get...
Okay, so I'm doing that. You're right, because we're selling... I just sold, Video Blocks, because we know that many of our viewers are creators and would buy stock video footage.
Right.
But that seems to be far less intrusive... Okay, go ahead, Stacey.
Or isn't being talked about is we are moving from demographic information or broad strokes to almost an omniscient perspective on people. And once you have that, advertising has always sought to make us feel vulnerable so we could assuage that with buying something, right?
That doesn't have to, though. No, I don't think I do that in any of our ads.
No, you don't have to, but that's always been a mode that can be employed in advertisement. What happens when you are omniscient, you can identify people at their most vulnerable in places you don't have to create the low self-esteem. You just swoop in when it's there and can offer a product. And I think... That's almost predatory, and we're having a hard time discussing it because we don't recognize these companies is having, again, that omniscience. And the only thing we think of is,
Sorry. I thought you were.
Okay, here we go. Only thing we think is omniscient is God, right? And we've ascribed all sorts of moral rules associated to God.
Oh, good point.
So it's really kind of about what the role is for something that has that power.
With omniscience comes great responsibility.
Right. So here's the question, Stacey. You're right, and that omniscience can be used for good and bad. And so what I think we need to do is so what happens is that Facebook has this targeting machine, and someone comes along and figures out how to target racists with giving them more racism, right? And Facebook didn't build it that way. That wasn't part of the architecture. And once it's pointed out to them that you can do that, or you can buy political ads with rubles, or you can do these other bad things, think like your Mac cuts, you figure out how to cut it off. So what I would ask is, if we give Facebook the benefit of the doubt, insofar as they're not trying to build something that is intended to be used to get people they're vulnerable, but it is being used that way, what are the principles that you would suggest to them about how to architect this and what to guard against and what to look for? That to me is the constructive way to have this conversation.
I think it's before you even begin. I think Facebook should recognize first, and I don't think it has done this yet, it should recognize what it's built, Because you can't start addressing these except by piecemeal, which is probably not the right way. But to say, okay, so I would like to see, and maybe Mark Zuckerberg in his trip around the world is doing this, but I want to see them understand and admit that they have built this thing that can see into people's lives and feelings in a way that is historically unprecedented, and say, hey, that's an awesome responsibility. And once they've done that, I think they need to establish some sort of moral code. I mean, again.
Yeah, I agree. So I'm about to start a project. There's a guy named Dov Seidman. We haven't announced anything yet.
Yeah, just did.
Yeah, kind of. He runs a company called LRN. If your company gets in trouble and you want to hide it, you hire a PR company. If you want to fix your culture and figure it out and learn how to be ethical and teach your staff how to be ethical, you call Dov. And Dov's a very good guy, and he has a big business trying to make companies more moral. And so we're talking about trying to work together. And this is a discussion I'm going to come back to again and again, and I want to call on you guys, is that I think what we have to do is to help them figure out exactly those kinds of moral principles. And so when it comes to, let's say, political advertising, I would argue that the way to get ahead of all this is to decide to set entirely new standards that leapfrog everybody else about transparency of political advertising, on who's buying it, what it says, what the message is, and who's targeted, and go overboard and say that's the right thing to do for the democracy. What is it to do about advertising to emotions and emotional signals? What are the principles there that that we can then call upon when we say, hey, somebody, I just got a disease and somebody called up, tried to sell something to me. There's a principle we can call on and say, whoa, Facebook, you shouldn't allow that. That's against your principles. Well, first, you're right. They have to know how it's being used. And second, we have to help them establish principles. And I think the same is true of media, because our business model leads to cats and freaking Kardashians. And it leads to the kind of polarization that we have. And Donald Trump said two heads of American news organizations may be bad for America, but he's good for business. So we've got the same problem in media as we're going to new revenue streams. It goes back to your trust point, Stacey, right? What's mis-selling your trust? What is the violation of privacy? What is the violation of emotions and exploitation? This is a big discussion to have. And I don't think that the platforms or media companies know how to. It's a discussion we have to have. So I want to come back to you often on this topic.
I don't think this is actually a discussion we can have in a capitalistic society. And I'm not saying I'm a socialist. I'm just saying that...
Communist.
Exactly. But if your highest goal, and you will hear this again and again from people, is the fiduciary duty is to shareholders. And if you put that in the mindset of my duty is to make money, your morals often will go by the wayside.
Often, but not inevitably.
No, but... You also have to think about, if you're going to do that, everyone has to play by that game. Otherwise, you're like this holy roller who's like feeling all good about themselves and everybody loves you, but you're not making any money. And thus some activist investor is going to come in and change your policies. So I think it's fine to say, hey, this is what we're building. This is the world we're living in. But we can't just isolate it to the companies. We're kind of in this like... race to the bottom in terms of putting a price on everything as we atomize all this data about people and we turn it into insights to help sell them things.
But the insights can also be used to give them greater relevance and value, to give them greater service. So that if you demonize the data as opposed to the use of the data.
I'm not demonizing it. I'm just...
You're not, but others are. Others are.
Including, I think you actually get a very... Well... I don't think you need to investigate people's sex lives, love lives, friendships, social graph to serve them better. You get very good signals from just what they consume.
Well, but we should. We have I don't to really our think you need to do that. Right, but we don't even.
We've
do that
done yet. That for generations. That's how media works. If you sell more newspapers, you're doing the job right.
No, media treats everybody the same. And that's exactly how we ended up in this mess. That's exactly how we ended up with clickbait. That's exactly because you had, at least you had a scarcity, and you could say you were haughty and wonderful, but you were also putting in sleazy real estate sections that were actually just bought. That's how you made your money. Okay, but I'm the only guy in town with the newspaper, and I'll do that, and that's fine. And I'll cheat there, and I'll be okay over here, and nobody's. I'm the only game. Then when you get into an abundance-based market where everybody's competing with everybody, then you fall to this desperation. The lower the value, the higher the desperation. And so that business model is leading us astray. And it is the business model the media has. It's also the business model that Facebook and Google have to this extent, to an extent.
So you're saying, for instance, in television, by chasing ratings, we ended up doing reality shows and bad
yes.
sitcoms.
When cost became prohibitive, that's what we did. Now, when you only have 3 networks, right, you made crap and you could sell it, and that was that. Then when you had 150 networks, the belief was that's going to be too much content, quality will go down. What happened? Quality rose because we had more choice. We could leave the crap
right.
and go to the good stuff.
So
the
advertisers are
still
then
stupid and still buys networks. Right. And the networks have lower audience, higher costs. So what do? They go to crap.
Right. So, you know, I wish advertisers would realize how good a deal podcasts are, but that's another story.
Amen, brother.
But that's been a benefit. So having a much broader market has allowed many people to chase individual audiences, not necessarily intruding on people's privacies to do so. We do a survey once a year that gives us some information, and we notice what shows get watched, and we read our emails. Aren't those enough signals to generate good content?
So I'll give you an
Why
example.
Do I need to know what I'll the person at home is income is?
Well, that's because you're doing that because the advertiser wants.
I don't ask that.
I agree. That's ridiculous. I'll give you an example. At my commerce meeting yesterday, I heard someone who's experienced in the business was involved in a big travel site, and they were doing commerce there. And for some reason, there's no rhyme or reason to this. Only experience would tell you this. That what sells best on a travel site, what would you think it'd be? Obvious question.
Hotel reviews. Yeah,
right.
Oh,
right.
Travel. Oh, okay. I thought it was a trick question. Okay.
No, it's not. I was going for the
travel.
Obvious.
Yeah.
This is the professorial thing. You ask
okay.
the dumb question.
Is this
question.
The Socratic
and
method?
And then
okay,
you prove
right.
yourself to be
okay,
smarter
I'm
because ready. You're going to give the real answer. Real answer? Shoes.
Shoes? Because
why?
Travelers
I have no
buy
idea.
Shoes? Yeah.
Because I'm fantasizing when I travel and then a shoe ad that has followed me there might become an affordable luxury, an escape from my boring everyday life.
Very good.
I buy a lot of shoes online.
I buy a lot of smartphones. Same thing.
Having data about people is not enough. Well, let me ask you this then. Do you think that Netflix's Twitter about the Christmas Prince was terrible or funny? I say funny.
I thought it was both.
But wait, before you move on from shoes, how did the travel site learn that?
Because they would try different things and they would find.
Right. So what's wrong with that?
That's what sells.
That's data. That's not spying.
Oh my God, Leo, that's data.
That's data, but that's not spying on you. That's not figuring out who's in their manic phase so you can advertise gambling.
Point, so in this company, when they see somebody is travel interested and they go to the travel site a lot, wherever they are,
don't lump all shoes. Data together. There's some data.
That's what I'm saying. Don't. Yes, that's exactly what I'm saying to okay. you. Don't lump all data together. Make data bad. The use of it.
I'm not making data bad, but I'm saying that selling against a company that uses...
Not all intrusive.
No, it's not all intrusive. But a lot of what Facebook does is...
So, wait. So, this is what I'm trying to get you both to be constructive. So, define intrusive to the point that that you end up with a principle that they could enforce and that you could hold them to. That's the goal. That's the discussion we need to have. Instead of just saying, well, Facebook's just awful. They know all this stuff about you. And my God, what could happen?
Well, the reason this came up.
We've already established these. Look at you don't advertise against medical conditions.
Right.
You don't advertise against sexual orientation. You don't advertise against race.
Race, color, creed, national origin.
Many
medical conditions? No, I'm going to disagree. I'm going to disagree strongly there.
Oh, because you want more AFib information?
Because I have a lot of medical conditions and I've gotten value. That's how I discovered cardia.
Right. Okay, but
I discovered cardia because I have atrial fibrillation and I talk about it. And it was extremely valuable to me and could bloody well save my life that
so
I discovered that device.
The, The challenge is what's useful to you there on Facebook could also be used to discriminate against you in hiring, for example.
And there are other ways to find out about this gay fibril. There are very good methods for finding out about products for your various maladies without resorting to advertising.
I wasn't going to go searching for it, Leo. It came to me.
And you're lazy.
It came to me, and I was, no, I didn't know it existed.
It would behoove you to find out.
Well, and it came
and
to
so,
me.
So here's the deal. By talking about something broadly, Jeff, you opened yourself up to it and people would talk to you about it eventually. You would have found it regardless because you would have been like, oh, I have AFib. And someone would be like, hey, I don't know if you know this. But
that's how we used to do it. That's how it used to work. Called word of mouth.
So, and that's. Okay.
I'll give another example.
This stuff could be weaponized. That's why, Jeff, it could be.
That doesn't mean
is being weaponized.
And regulate that. You don't regulate the data. You don't call Facebook evil for knowing this.
Okay. If I go to
it's hard to regulate if it's dark and Facebook has not cooperated in any way.
Fine, then that's a principle you set. But the fact that people talk about their atrial fibrillation is not a bad thing.
Facebook has very carefully hidden what it's doing because they know it would be highly offensive. And so we haven't even seen the dark ads that they showed people for the 2016 election. And they never will because it would hurt them if people knew what they were doing. And you can't regulate something that's hidden like that. How are you going to get that information?
Well, you can have a discussion of the principles involved. And
so
you can get
and we're having a discussion of principles. And what you are doing is you're taking it down to your personal level. And you constantly do this. And it's very frustrating because you seem to conflate a principle with your feelings. And that is in your value from something.
I think it's the opposite, Stacey.
No,
are saying this bad thing could happen, and I'm scared of that.
We're saying as a principle, we have regulated medical stuff already. You don't advertise against medical stuff. That's actually something that even when AT&T and others were looking at doing web-based search, like advertising against people's web searches, they were pulling out certain categories because they were deemed sensitive. And that is just a fact. It is not an opinion. It is something that is so far in society been agreed upon. Now you're coming in and you're saying, hey, I don't agree with that, which is fine. But as an argument, when we're trying to set these principles, you can't take your personal experience.
And you say, what's the implication of
privilege in a lot of ways, because you're not considering the other ways that people are hurt by this. But you're not talking about it at this level, Jeff. You're talking about it at your own personal level. We need to take it up to talk about it from everyone's perspective. So throw your perspective in there, but that is not the end all be all.
But Stacey, here's the problem. When you take it up too high, then you end up saying all data's, everything could be dangerous.
I do understand that, but you're taking it too low, too personal.
I'm just using an example. That's all I'm saying. I wrote a book about sharing, right? I believe that there's a value to society sharing. I believe that if you go to, which I sent you for free, by the way, I believe that if you go to the root causes of some of the issues here, they're not about the technology. It's not about Facebook. It's about our own society. Why are we ashamed of talking about being sick in the society? Well, there's a real tangible reason, which is that you could be affected in your employment. Then regulate that. Dana Boyd taught me that, right? Regulate the use of the data and the use of the knowledge, not the knowledge. And that there can be, and then don't cut off the opportunities that can come. You cut off opportunities that can come of benefit.
But nobody's going to regulate your ability to share with your friends and family or in public or even on this show, say, your medical issues. Nobody's going to regulate
that. They're going to regulate that Cardia Vic and Dotra can't advertise it to me.
Well, that would be the wrong place to regulate it. The place to regulate it is the place that's most difficult to regulate it is the company that is willing to take that information and monetize it in a way that I think we would all agree is inappropriate. Well, maybe you wouldn't, Jeff, but Safe and I would agree is inappropriate, right, Stacey? So I think that the problem is I don't think you're going to get Facebook to help you in this, and I don't think you could force – I don't know, maybe you can force them to help you in this.
I don't know that – well, maybe they will, maybe they won't. But what I'm trying to say is that the discussion that I hear constantly is basically just writing off Facebook and the 2 billion people who are there and saying, oh, it's so awful and wrong. If we don't demand, if we don't have a discussion about the principles in a way that we have expectations of them, I think they should be doing it on their own.
I don't think not. There's, I'll be honest.
I think we should on the outside.
I don't think there's a way to save Facebook. I think it's,
see, that's where
its business model is entirely based upon the unfettered sharing of personal information, which it then sells against.
Okay, there's
that
no way
from Leo, day one, that was its business model.
There is no way to save media because media is built on exploiting tabloid interests to an extreme and inevitably leads to clickbait, which will inevitably lead us to where we are in our political atmosphere. There's no way to save media either. But of course, we try to save media because it's worth doing. And I'm not going to write off Facebook. I'm not going to write off Google. And I'm also going to do my Gutenberg spiel, take a drink, that we're early days. We've got to learn. We've got to have these discussions writing off. That's the essence of why that's moral panic. That's moral panic that says this is going to be awful and we've got to stop it. Well, there's huge benefits that get thrown out with the bathwater there.
I'm only lately come to this point of view, though.
I think
there is a problem. Go ahead.
Outcomes. Let's talk about that, because that's actually really worthwhile. And I think especially in the case of algorithms, we do actually have a problem that will only be because you can't see what's happening behind the scenes.
I think outcomes is a great structure. Yes, I agree. That's a great structure. Explore that.
I know that. So when we talk about that, though, right now we don't have the framework for it because someone has to be hurt before we see the problem. And then once someone's hurt, we tend to overspecify it to that particular case. We get a lot of knee-jerk legislation is the worry. But we also then need to think about, if we're going to regulate outcomes, how can we do it to offer retribution? Do we want to offer retribution to the person who's hurt as we discovered that, oh, maybe this was a bad use of data sharing? So we've got to think about that. We've got to think about how to do it quickly so someone isn't hurt a lot, or maybe multiple people don't have to get really hurt. We have to set up things in place to track when people get hurt and who gets hurt. Because right now, there's Black Lives Matter is all about people who've gotten hurt for years and we've just ignored it because it was inconvenient. So if we're going to start talking about regulating outcomes, we have to think about how to build that into the way we work as a society, how we legislate and how we make laws.
I agree. That's a positive way to have the discussion. And you're quite right about and this is where you're going after me. The specificity on technology is an equal problem to the specificity on the person. The example I always use on this is the German official who said that henceforth the use of facial recognition and geotechnology together was outlawed. Not seeing that it could find missing children and Alzheimer's patients and so on and so forth, obviously, right?
And people who've been stalked by abusive spouses.
So we look at the outcomes and we figure out how to regulate this. But the two technologies together is not fundamentally evil because it could be used in a case in bad ways.
But it's not panic to bring up the problems. And that's what Facebook should be considering in the beginning.
But the German
should be their reckoning.
I agree. And that's what I'm also trying to say to all of us is that we, the public, and we who are the tech cognoscenti have to help them do that. Just saying Facebook cannot be reclaimed, as Leo just said, isn't going to get us anywhere.
Well, people should abandon Facebook immediately. I think you're playing in a space that's incredibly dangerous, and you will deeply regret. And Congress is never going to regulate it, and it's only going to get bigger and more malign. And I think we need to all stop using Facebook.
A world without social is a world I already regret.
It's not a world without social. It's a world without Facebook. It's a big difference.
Okay, so I'll say
in
what
fact,
I said
you conflating social with Facebook is part of the problem, Jeff. You need to get out of the house here a little bit.
Go through your feed right now and show me the first awful, evil, horrible thing you find in your Facebook feed.
No, it's nothing in my feed. I'm not talking about my feed. I'm talking about what Facebook is doing. I'm talking about the use of big data and the kind of data Facebook's gathering and how people are providing, happily, willingly providing to Facebook without realizing that ultimate...
Sure, it's okay.
And share with a go have a meal with a friend. Then stop putting it in this giant maw that is chewing up all our data and creating.
See, this is making a moral panic about data. And again, I argue that this data is exactly the salvation of media and the journalism that you were lionizing quite properly before.
I think it will save Facebook.
Data, we're gonna die.
I think it will save Facebook. I see no evidence that it's going to save the New York Times.
I disagree. I just had a meeting of executives from that company and others just yesterday where commerce as a revenue stream built on trust, built on data, is a major contributor.
But you use data as if it's a monolithic thing. There's data and there's data. There's data about what mental state a visitor is in so that we can give them an ad that will take advantage, maximum advantage of their mental state.
Regulate to that principle. Then regulate to that.
You can't regulate it. And we, by the way, have a Congress that will never regulate it. We can barely keep the internet service providers from screwing us royally.
Then self-regulate to it. And then
yeah,
and then
you know what the self-regulation is? Of them. Stop using Facebook. That's the self-regulation. That's a very, very, very good self-regulation. If everybody does that,
Is Google
that too? Google's a more troubling problem because I don't know. You know, I don't know how we stop using Google. To be honest with you, you can easily stop using Facebook. That's a very low bar.
So you can use what's the one that DuckDuckGo
or whatever it's called? DuckDuckGo.
You can use those, and you can end up getting absolutely.
No, I agree.
Search results.
I used DuckDuckGo for a long time.
Facebook is completely unnecessary. Google is a little bit more difficult to live without because internet search
enables people to connect with each other. Wonderful things can happen on Facebook. That's just too cynical.
It's not the only way it can happen. I don't understand why you think it's the only way people can connect with each other. There's lots of ways you can connect.
What do you want to invent instead?
You don't have to invent anything. We've survived pretty well for a few millennia without it.
Yeah, in a world that was controlled by a very few media companies, and that's the only way we could learn anything was from them.
Here's the good news. That world's long gone, with or without Facebook. That world is long gone. So we no longer need Facebook to save us from the oligarchies.
What you're complaining about is your fellow man and woman in some level.
No, I'm complaining about Mark Zuckerberg's Facebook. It's very simple. I'm complaining about a company that is willing to mine personal data from people in a way that is offensive to make money. And I think it is a blight on our society. And I think we will look back and say it was. I think we already know it is. I think we've seen the results of it, Jeff.
I have to do my caveat here, my full disclosure.
I know.
Because I haven't done it in this show yet. We didn't ruin that show. So I started the News Integrity Initiative, which is funded substantially by Facebook, Craig Newmark Foundation, Ford Foundation, and others. I'm independent of Facebook. I'm critical of Facebook. But I also believe that there's value there. Otherwise, I wouldn't have done this.
I would never impugn your independence
in any way.
And I think it's important people understand that, that's a good thing to disclaim, but there's no suggestion, no hint.
Well, I know when you were saying
impugning your integrity.
But the audience can decide for themselves. They can say, he's just defending social and Facebook because of that.
Cobra in the chat room says, well, you could say that about anything. You could say, don't watch Monday Night Football because it's contributing to violence. Yeah, I'm very seriously considering stopping watching the NFL because it's what it does to the players.
What it does to those people, yeah.
Yeah. That's actually a very legitimate point, Cobra. I agree with you.
let's move to
We're going to stop. Soon. We're going to stop. And we're done with the philosophical conversations. Yay. We have gifts. We have toys. We have an ad from Sonic. We'll have more with Jeff Jarvis and Stacey Higginbotham. No, I think it's really a great conversation. Very important conversation. And I think it's crystallizing. I think the timing, it's becoming more and more of an important conversation. Let's say that. Our show today brought to you by a company that is doing everything it can to preserve net neutrality. You know, there are internet service providers who believe in net neutrality, and one of them is Sonic. And I know it because I know Dane Jasper, the founder. I've known him since he started Sonic. I've been a customer since he started Sonic. In fact, we're customers right now. In fact, if you're watching this show, you can say, thank you, Sonic. We are literally brought to you by our 10 gigabit fiber interconnect connection to the outside world through Sonic. Too many people pay too much for unsatisfactory cable internet in this country. Sonic delivers fast, affordable internet, phone, even TV to homes and businesses all over California. Residential and business, fiber to the premise networks, gigabit connectivity. Look what you get and look at the price. 15 email accounts, a gigabyte of storage, personal web hosting, including a new domain, fax line service, a home phone connection. You can port your existing phone number to it so you don't lose your number. unlimited local and long distance calling. Remember, we used to have to think about how much your long distance bill would be. There's no long distance bill. How about that? And let's not forget gigabit internet, 1,000 megabits per second, only $40 a month. $40 a month. And incidentally, Sonic stands up for privacy, friendly local customer support, never caps the bandwidth, has affordable pricing, and believes in net neutrality. We'll never, ever, ever block any bit of the internet. It's your internet. Get it from somebody who cares. Join the internet revolution. Visit sonic.com/twit. Receive your first month of Sonic internet and phone service free, plus bundle with Dish and save $120 on your Sonic bill. Visit sonic.com/twit. That's one way you could fight for net neutrality. If you're lucky enough to have a choice in internet service provider.
Yeah, if only I could.
Choose wisely.
Love to have them.
I know.
Yeah, every time I talk to Dane, I ask him to Austin.
Please come to Austin. Did Google ever get near you, anywhere near you with the Google Fiber?
They did. They went south. They had a lot of problems with their contractors. Yeah. So.
And now they've kind of given up, haven't they?
They have definitely pulled back. I think they're going to do some 5G stuff with millimeter wave and microwave.
That may be the last hope is wireless internet. Maybe the last hope.
I have a new column coming out in IEEE. I'm writing a column for them on the internet.
That's geeky. Wow.
It is. It's so geeky.
Holy cow. I'm impressed.
So 5G is supposed to be in millimeter wave, specifically the fixed wireless access to homes could be competitive, but it's not going to help our rural problems. And you can learn more about that all the way in March, because this is a print magazine and I don't even understand.
Remember those days?
I'm sorry, when is this coming out?
Did you ever write for print?
I did. I did some for Fortune, and then I had a print.
Back in your newspaper days. Yeah.
Yeah, I worked for a weekly for a little while. I worked for a daily. I started a magazine that was print.
Really? What was that?
Oh. It was my college magazine. Aww. It still exists now on the web.
This is heavy. This is it. The new Google Max.
Really? It's Google Max.
Wow. That's big.
It's bigger than I thought, and it's heavy. But
bread boxes aren't that big.
When it comes to, it's about the size of a large bread box. When it comes, it's now available for $3.99. I ordered it the day it became available, got it 2 days later. The heavy's good when it comes to sound, because it means you have a big old transformer in there. Oh, God.
Thump.
Thump, clonk. Well, you know, for people listening at home, that's the only way of illustrating the actual weight of this thing. You know, it's kind of frustrating. They put a tear tab on one side, but not on the other. Oh, wait a minute. Yes, they did. There it is. Rip. All right, now. There it is. It's a fabric-covered speaker. It's the largest Google Home they make. This is pretty good. It's bigger than I thought. I was thinking that they were kind of hiding the size of it by not showing it in pictures with humans. But now that I, a human, have it in my hands, it comes with a rubber coaster to sit on that isn't attached to it in any way. I guess it is kind of it's like a magnetic.
Why?
Yeah, I don't know. Isn't that
weird? So you don't scratch your furniture?
Yeah, and also for isolation, right?
Yeah.
Attach base here for vertical orientation. That's why. You could put it on either side. So it could be horizontal or vertical. Here's the plug, John, if you want to plug it in. Give it to
me. Is it USB-C?
Nope.
But
it's a standard power cord. It needs more power probably than USB-C can offer.
Aha. Uh-huh.
Yeah. It's got on top of it, am I supposed to tear this off? Yeah. Oh, wow.
You just voided the warranty.
I don't know if I should have torn it off. Because it's a sticker that shows where you raise the volume touch. And touch and play, but it's
I
not
had that problem with the Google Mini.
There's no on the plastic; it doesn't have anything at all. You just have to remember.
Yeah, that was. I feel like that's not the best design decision.
It's pretty
by Google.
It's pretty. All right, so I've just plugged it in. You can see on the front through the fabric, there's some lights going. It's like a Google Mini only on steroids, right? So now I have
to
launch the Google Home app. Let's get my phone out here. Wow. That's a rich sound coming out.
Is it?
Yeah.
Welcome to Google Home. To get started, download the Google Home app on a phone or tablet.
I think it's definitely good sound. There's my phone.
If the Google lady didn't sound good, I'd be very concerned.
Yeah. Yeah, really.
You're like, guys, come on.
Come on. Get the Google lady sounding good. All right. Now I got to do the Google Home app. Let's see how it figures out. Get started. Okay. Welcome home. That's the account. Okay. Location access. Yes, yes. I guess I've never used this on this phone. This is the new Pixel 2 XL. One device found. Look at that. I don't know how it knows. One device found. It sees my Google Home already, ready for setup. Because it couldn't possibly be on our Wi-Fi. It must either be Bluetooth LE, or sometimes it's the noise. It's making a noise, right? Would you like to set that up? Yes. Let's see how I can show you this so you can see it. Your phone may disconnect from Wi-Fi during... Oh, sorry. You moved it. Go back to that other shot. Yeah, there you go. Your phone may disconnect from Wi-Fi during setup. Little bouncing, interesting bouncing. Connected. Do you hear the sound? Yes. Okay. Where is this device? Add custom room. It's in the shed. Okay. We're going to add it to that Wi-Fi. It's going to get my Google Home, gets my Wi-Fi password from the phone. So that's good. Yeah, put a little microphone in front of it so we can hear it. Yeah, that's a good idea. I kind of like how this looks. It is the size of a Sonos, roughly, isn't it, John? Would you say it's about Play 5 sized?
Yeah.
A little smaller.
So that's a bright light behind the fabric. Looks very...
Yeah, that's telling you that it's alive. It's alive.
Yeah.
It's alive.
It's easy to see.
I slid it off its rubber coaster, though. Let's get that back out of there. There we go. That'll probably help with the sound. Get personal results with voice match. That's the one where it knows who you are. My assistant can already recognize my voice. Yes, that's true. So it's I don't need to retrain it. It knows. Continue. Voice match complete. Choose your assistant's voice. Now I get a choice. This is new, right? Mm. We only had one voice in the past, right? Play sample.
Hi, I'm your Google assistant, here to help you throughout your day.
That's one. Here's two.
Hi, I'm your Google assistant, here to help you throughout your day.
Stacy, are you happy we can have a boy?
He sounds a little robotic.
Google assistant, here to help you throughout your day.
Yeah, a little.
Oh, never mind that one. We're Sean Connery.
I'm your Google assistant, here to help you throughout
Well,
your
let's
day.
Just do it for a change of pace. Let's just use voice too. Yeah. Okay, I got my address. Add music services. Google Play Music. YouTube Music. That's good. Next. Almost done. Add a payment method. No.
Thank you.
No. Actually, you should already have one. It's now going to download an update, unfortunately, which is just going to say about 4 minutes. Here, this is a Sonos Play 5. So it's a little shorter would be the only thing. But that's big enough to be good sound, I think, you know. So that's what you're looking for. I mean, really, the idea is this is a speaker that can do all the Google Assistant stuff, but sound good, right? So I think that might... Ooh. Wow. Look at that. It's got multicolored lights. I like that.
Ooh, my ear pods and my ears are vibrating.
Really? It was that much bass? All right. Well, it's going to take a little while to set up. While we're doing that, I'll show you something else new. Are you a Project Fi subscriber? Jeff, did you do this last year, the Project Fi game?
Guide
the skier with your mouse?
No, I don't do that stuff. You don't do Facebook. I don't do that crap.
this is good for you. Oh, I hit the tree. I pulled a Sunny.
Violence.
No, he says, no, that's not funny. Sunny. Now, I'm going to win a prize if I can get all the way down. Wonder what the prize is. It something good? Oh, what happened? Oh, come on. Shouldn't have clicked the mouse. Whoa. Oh, am I supposed to go through the gates? Oh, I am. Oh, I missed the gate. Oh, whoa. I'm not a very good skier, as you can see. But the snowboarder knocked me over. Oh.
You won anyway.
Don't look at my free Wi-Fi code. Oh, well, I guess I'll never be able to use that again. GoGo enabled flights, free in-flight Wi-Fi, good for one use until March 31st. I'll tell you what, anybody who wants to use that,
yeah,
be my guest.
I think I've run across GoGo once.
Yeah. So that's cool. So you can get an hour of, is it an hour? No, it's a whole flight of free GoGo Wi-Fi. Oh, my speaker, the Shed speaker is ready. Continue.
Hi, I'm your Google Assistant. I'm here to help. To learn a few things you can do, continue in the Google Home app.
Doesn't that sound good?
Mm-hmm.
Play some music.
Play some music.
Yeah. Hey, Google, play some music.
All right, music on Google Play Music. Here you go.
He's a little crunchy, isn't he? I'm going to take my headphones out so I can hear this. It really thinks I like the metal. Wow.
See, if you would
like, hey, Google!
Go along, you wouldn't make a bad decision.
Hey, Google!
Okay.
Hey, Google.
Say okay.
Oh, I said, stop. Okay. Hey, Google, play some Frank Sinatra.
Playing Frank Sinatra on Google Play Music.
Oh, that sounds pretty good. Yeah. You know what? Okay. It's not very rich and deep. Hey, Google, stop.
Tell it to play, play Beyonce.
Hey, Google, play Beyonce.
Playing Beyonce on Google Play Music.
That's got some nice bass in it, right? That should sound good. Da, 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 da. So crazy right now. Yeah. Hey, Google. Volume up. Hey, Google. Volume 11.
Wait, doesn't that stop it and break it?
It did. It broke it. I didn't know it would do that.
Someone was reporting that it couldn't play too loudly.
Yeah, it just turned it right off. Hey, Google. Volume 8. That's not bad. It's got a kind of big high end.
Yeah, I was gonna say, I don't like the highest.
That's not bad. Bass is a little bit better once we get it that loud. It's actually sounds. What do you think of the high end, guys? You think it was kind of tinny? It's all right. They're going, yeah, it's all right. My trained listeners. So it's a little pricey, right? $399.
What does a comparable Sonos speaker cost?
$499. Right?
Wow.
Yeah. So it's less than that. What I don't know what it does is the multi room play. I think it's supposed to do that, right? But that's the thing that's Sonos' secret sauce. Anyway, I'm glad I got it. I think that's a good thing. You put that in the. You know, where you listen to music in the bedroom or the living room or whatever. That's pretty good. Now, that's another thing it doesn't do. The Sonos will let you buy two and pair them in stereo, left, right, stereo. I don't think Google's mentioned that capability. All right, one more thing to cheer you up, and then we'll get back to hard news. The year in search. This is going to... Okay, get your hankies out. Do you have my audio? All right. The year in search. Get your hankies out. This year, more than ever, we asked, how do wildfires start? Oh, dear. How far can North Korean missiles go? How much will the wall cost? How many refugees in the world? How do hurricanes form? This is not cheerful at all. How to board up a window? How to calm a dog during a storm? How to help flood victims, how to help refugees, how to help Puerto Rico, how to help Mexico, how to help Las Vegas. Oh, good Lord. Grenfell Tower, Rohingya, Syria, Houston. How to make a protest sign.
No matter what we're going through, we still have to push forward.
Are you ready to shake up the world?
Oh, my God. There's the Women's March. How to Run for Office. You think he Googled that? That crawl? How to Watch the Eclipse. Yeah, we did Google that.
Not like the president did.
Wear glasses. Baby glasses. No, she's looking right at it. How to Make a Difference. Big check. Take a knee. How to Be a Strong Woman.
Me too.
Ellen.
Me too.
Me too.
Oh, wow. How to Be a Good Parent. How to Be a Superhero. Gal Gadot. Firefighters. Oh, Shaking Hands. How to Be Fearless. The BBC presenter. Posing. Playing music. Running in the Lib Marathon. Winning an award. Flying a dragon. Dancing in Stranger Things. Head exploding. Protest marches. How to Move Forward. Search on. That's kind of politicized. What do you think?
We're living in politicized time. I mean, yeah. I don't know if it's politicized. Some of them are, but if they're actually popular searches, a lot of people did say, hey, how do I run for office? Even I've Googled that. So
good for you. Are you going to run?
Not now.
No.
That would be a terrible
did
politician.
Did you ever run for office? Either of you?
No. I ran for like student council president. That's the closest I got. And I think it was in sixth grade. It wasn't even in high school. That's the look back at 2017 top search trends. Yeah, it kind of does bring home some. The Google Home Max does allow pairing two units for stereo, says Fedway in our chat room. Thank you, Fedway. I'm glad to know.
Oh, The Onion.
What did The Onion say? Are you looking at Onion headlines? That's a good way to cheer up.
Repealing net neutrality will help spur innovation, announces face of Ajit Pai blaring from every computer screen in nation.
Oh, Leo, last week, did you ever get the earbuds?
I did.
Did you talk about them last week?
Yeah. What do you think? Are you wearing them now?
Oh, I canceled the order.
You should have. Rightly.
Okay,
right.
That's
good
what
move.
I was asking. Okay.
Good move.
Right, good.
The thing that they really sold them on, the Translate thing, actually, in hindsight, I feel like I drank the Kool-Aid at that event because, truthfully, it doesn't work as well as just doing it with the phone. The problem being that you hear the translation, but the speaker doesn't hear the translation, so can't identify errors in the translation. When you do it with the phone, it works exactly the same way, just as well. The only difference is that the when the guy's talking to you, the translation is heard by both parties instead of just in your ears. It still requires a phone if you're using the earbuds. There's really no advantage to it. It's not some special magic that the earbuds do, the Pixel Buds
right.
do.
Got it.
Pixel Buds are hard to pair. They're hard to wrap up.
Really,
The sound is good, but not the best sound ever. For that price, I was able to buy at $149 the Jabra Sport Elite, which sound 10 times better and have many more functions, including heart rate monitor. It is, I'll tell you, the one nice thing about the Pixel Buds that I really, really did like and I would like to see more of is I was able to hear if you wear them around, you can still hear ambient noise because they don't seal the ear. Right. And any notifications that come to your phone, you can hear. If a text comes in, it says, you just got a text from Lisa. Would you like me to read it? And you could say, yes, just without hands-free. It reads it to you. Would you like to respond? Yes. What would you like me to say? And you could do all that hands-free in with the earbuds in. I think that's a nice feature, being able to hear notifications and respond to some notifications. So those
let me show you something. I'm going to unbox. Just be right back.
Oh, another unboxing.
Ooh,
we'll have a more complete review of the Google Home Max Saturday on the new screensavers. I will spend some more time with it. The other thing that Google did this week is three app experiments. Are you familiar with the app experiments?
I'm not. I'm going to ignore that word even exists.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm like they released some experimental apps. Did they?
Yes, app experiments.
Nope. Cannot hear you. No. Not listening.
I agree. Not exactly a felicitous neologism.
To make experiments.
Introducing experiments, exploring the potential of mobile photography. They're all three of them kind of dopey, but they're kind of interesting. So Storyboard is only on Android, and I'll show you how it works a little bit because I have all three of them. Two of them are available. Two of them you can get on both phones, then there's one unique one for each phone. The Storyboard is unique to Android, and what it does is takes any video in your phone and turn it into a comic book. And the problem is it doesn't seem to be actually using any artificial intelligence. And by the way, if you don't like the mix, once you get a video, you can load it, save it, share it, load a different video. And then swiping down will do a remix. But it's like, for instance, that's the same picture. That guy's cut half. There's no people in that one or that one. It's like, at least Google, you have face recognition. You could attempt to center on a face. What's this panel? It's got half of somebody's hair. And that's exactly the same twice over. I did this at a staff meeting. And of course, people had fun with it. It's cool. Like, there's no reason for this panel. It seems like Google's not actually applying any of its artificial intelligence to the generation of these. It is cool that you can, you know, just generate these panels. But what I found is you have to swipe through it a bunch of times till you find one that works. Like, that one almost works except for that empty one. So you just keep swiping till you get one that I tweeted a few that kind of worked. If you find one you like and then accidentally swoop away, you can't go back. So that's it.
So sweep slowly.
Sweep slowly. Make sure.
They're anti-conditioning us for Tinder.
Like what's? Yeah, right. What's that? That's what. Why would he make a frame out of that? It looks. I don't know what that is. It's like.
Is that just kind of part? Is it just too big? Do you have to shrink the image?
No, that's the comic book. So sometimes it does cool things like split it into two panes. That's cool. Like I would save that, but. It seems like Google could have done better with this app experiment. This is a failed, what is it? Like what? That's his shoulder? That's the back of a chair? I don't understand why you would, because it's going through like a 20-second video and picking frames and then cartoonizing them and putting them in panels like a comic book. And it does seem like it likes smiles. Like, it keeps picking this picture of Megan. It really likes Megan, I think. I don't understand it. Anyway, so that's one. I'll show you some of the iPhone ones here. Get my iPhone out. Actually, I don't have my iPhone, so I can't. Would you get me my iPhone? So that's Storyboard. There's Selfissimo, which really has no reason for its existence. Selfissimo is a selfie generator that basically just keeps taking pictures and puts them in... you know, kind of like you were at a photo booth, kind of. That one's iOS and Android. They're black and white. Snaps a photo each time you pose.
Okay, that is super cute. I would do that 1,000 times with my child.
Yeah, well, it's like a photo booth, right?
Yeah, I mean, like, think about how popular photo booths are for, like, kids' parties.
So here, I'll do Selfissimo. So can you show over my shoulder? Okay, so it says start, and then it just...
Do you stop it, or does it just go until you stop
it? It goes until you stop it. And now I have 9 somewhat interesting...
I guarantee you, if I show that to my daughter, she would be over that.
It's like photo booth, kind of, on the Mac, only it's not distorting. And it's black and white, which is great. So they kind of look literally like a photo booth, you know?
Yeah, that's fun.
It's kind of fun.
And it's awesome.
Yeah.
So
these are all free. And even Google kind of, you know, they're experiments, or as we might call them, app-speriments.
We would not call them that.
And finally, Scrubbies.
The idea of scrubbies is, so you've played with Boomerang, Instagram's Boomerang, which allows you to take a clip and loop it forever, right? So I'm gonna capture something here, John. Come closer and do a little dance. Okay, that's couldn't have been better. So so here's John's one finger to preview. Okay, so that's his dance, and you have, I guess you have two fingers to make a scrubby. Okay, so let's make a scrubby so I can choose which portions of John's dance I'd like to make into the scrubby, and I've created it now, and that's the scrubby. And
so it moves it into slow-mo and then loops it?
I don't know about the slow-mo part. I think that's not necessarily something, I don't know. It's an app experiment. Get it?
Yeah, again. Stop trying to make app experiment happen, Leo.
I'm just teasing you.
I know.
Okay.
Did you get the
yes, stickers?
I can't.
Oh! I'll show you. Oh! This is the best thing. Where do you see this, Stacey? Do you, you have an I don't know if it's Pixel 2 only. I bet it is. Pixel?
I have a Pixel.
So you go into your camera. Okay. And you pick AR stickers. If you have the latest camera app, you'll have AR stickers in the hamburger menu.
In the menu.
And then.
I don't have it.
Oh, have Jeff, update. Phone. Update. So then you have a variety. So, like, there's Star Wars. There's just kind of.
These things.
Oh,
the
they're
stupid
great.
Things.
Yeah, but look, here's one I made with my daughter's name. Okay, watch this. I just have. So, this is my daughter's name in those inflatable balloons just floating. It looks like that you can move them around. It looks just like it's neat. It's like it's really floating. It's augmented reality. I'll show you some other ones. I'll show you some more because I did. A, I did.
I remember the Demigorgon from the.
Yeah, let me go to my photos booth and I'll show you photos.google.com because they get saved out. It makes movies out of them. So here's the app. Actually, this is a better example, so you can see how it is, and then. Here's this is a what is that, a they call that a walker, right? It's taking a while to load because these are all videos. I don't know why it's and it's got audio too, Karsten. Why is it taking so long to load? Maybe this is loaded. Oh, it doesn't. Let's try some other ones. Here's a Porg. Is that what you call it? And a BB-8. We did this during Windows Weekly, but they're not. Come on. What's going on? Google's not loading the videos. Anyway, stickers. I imagine, there'll be the opportunity to enhance it with other movie tie-ins. But right now it's Star Wars because that's coming out tomorrow. What else? You have birth letters, so you can write any message and have it float in balloons. You have... it's kind of like emojis. In fact, this is probably, I would guess, Google's response. So shall I make one? So what I do, this one, I don't know if you could show this over my shoulder. Here, let me point. You can't. So okay, pull out. Yeah, there you go. So you have to point somewhere like a desk. And then this.
Target bot shipped.
Hold on a second. Hold on. You're trying to do news. I'm trying to do a. So see that little guy?
I'm just like, wow.
See that little guy? Now he's there. Oh, this is a Stranger Things kid, isn't it? So I'm going to rotate. You can rotate around him. I don't know if you can poke him. No, you can't poke him. But that's the Stranger. So I record a little video with a Stranger Things kid on there. That's kind of cool. That's kind of cool. He's standing on my computer.
It's a lot of AI going on.
Yeah, I mean, that's, I think it's Google saying, oh, yeah, Apple, you know that iPhone thing that you did? We could do that. With one lens, we could do that.
How do I update the app?
I don't know why you didn't get it. You're on a Pixel 2 XL, right?
Yeah. What, are you 8.1 or?
Yeah.
I'm still 8.0.
Oh.
I can't figure out why.
Do your updates, dude.
It says I'm up to date.
You're not. You know what I did? You know what I did? Because I was impatient. I turned beta on, Android beta on. Got 8.1. And then it said, now it's the shipped version. Now you're getting the shipping version of 8.1. I said, okay. And I'll turn it off. So that's what you need to do. So I guess maybe that's the case. Maybe you need Android 8.1 to do that. So ship it.
So I can't even remember when I did this. I did a crowdfunding.
What is that?
So Anchor is Zolo Liberty Plus.
Oh, those are like the Pixel Buds.
Yeah. $99.
Nice.
Is what it cost me. I think it's $149 now. And
those look a lot like those Jabra Elite Sport Elites I was talking about. They look very similar.
So here's the little thing. The problem is nothing ever fits in my ear.
They didn't give you a variety of
They do have that. And then here's a fairly heavy.
Yeah, and that's the battery case. So you got to Jeff, you got to really that's one of the things I found with the Jabras is you have to really try all the knobs, little nubbies until you get
to do that.
Good fit.
And all that.
Yeah, you want
good. Yeah, so these are light.
I use the smallest.
Yeah.
So you may
use the biggest.
I'm the biggest.
Yeah. I have big ear holes.
Oh.
More than we wanted to know, right?
And mine are hairy too. Just
don't tell me, and don't tell us anything about your wax.
Let's talk about something
else. It's an experiment. They're not. Stacey, I just want you to know, just to clarify, I don't. Google.org donated $260 million to nonprofits. Is that one of your numbers, Jeff, in 2017?
No. I didn't know that.
Yeah. So they put their mouth where their video was. That doesn't really sound right, does it? They put their money where their video was. That's what I should have said. Education, economic opportunity, inclusion, disaster relief, crisis response. They gave $20 million towards efforts in Puerto Rico, the Caribbean, Florida, Houston, and South Asia. Project Loon, of course, remember that they restored connectivity to Puerto Rico with parts of Puerto Rico through Project Loon. That was volunteer time.
Did that work?
I don't know. I'm going to be there next week. I'll let you know.
It works if you have, I believe, an AT&T phone.
It was with AT&T. That's right.
That's pretty cool.
Actually got a press release from Puerto Rico saying we're open for business.
So you're going?
Yeah, I'm going in a week. From tomorrow. I'll be in San Juan.
For Christmas?
Yeah. Wow. My son and I have chartered a catamaran.
Oh, that's right. You mentioned that. Yeah.
And we're going to sail it around the British Virgin Islands, visiting all the exciting hurricane spots. Sundar Pichai said $500,000 for the Southern California fires. Anyway, nice job. Thank you, Google. Of course, every company Google size should be donating at least that much. At least. I think we should bring back tithing. What's 10% of Google's profits? More than that. More than that.
If you're not going to pay taxes, you might as well donate your money.
Exactly.
Well, Facebook just announced that they're going to start booking their advertising revenue locally in the country and not sending it all to
Bravo.
Ireland. That's a big deal.
I wonder how their shareholders feel about that.
Good question.
It doesn't matter because the shareholders have no power given the class structure.
Yeah. I did see that the new tax bill, and I don't know if this is the reconciled tax bill that they just announced or the Senate version, but with the 20%, I guess now 21% corporate tax rate, Apple will save $49 billion in taxes. So God knows they need the money. Google Maps will wake you up when you need to get off the bus. I thought that was good.
Yeah, I like that. That's cool.
That's coming.
But Leo, they're going to know where you are.
No, see, there's a good example. You're right. That's an example of data being beneficial. That's why I'm hesitate to throw Google in there.
Well, Facebook could wake you up too.
But do they?
Twitter won't even bother. Twitter will just say, sleep, you schmuck.
Facebook, but see, that's a perfect example. So Google uses location information in interesting and, I think, useful ways to the user. Facebook uses it just to keep track of where you've been and let advertisers know. The only thing I ever get from Facebook is, hey, I see you're somewhere. Would you want to check in? Let's take a little break and, unless you have other things, you want, cause I think it's time to get to our picks and our numbers and all of that stuff. Tweet.
So,
Storify. I know you were upset about that, Jeff.
Just too bad. It's, why did
Adobe
buy it?
They bought it to kill it. Stirify is saying, get your stories. Now, I remember Dan Patterson used it to great effect to cover Occupy.
Yeah.
So what was Storify?
Storify was just simply a way to put tweets together in a way, any collection of tweets you wanted together so that you could preserve them and share them as a collection.
You can no longer
talk about Twitter's new functionality.
Yeah, Twitter may have kind of scooped them a little bit. Storify says no new users, and we will end existing users' access on May 16th. Download your stories if you want to save them, but it doesn't seem that they've offered an API or any simple way to do it. And I'm seeing people complain. I have hundreds of stories on Storify. There's no easy way to get them all. That's a shame. And I'm willing to hate Adobe just as much as any man. Adobe's not a great steward, obviously. So Twitter is going to let you thread tweets now. You'll be able to do better tweet storms.
I thought you could always thread tweets.
Well, this is going to make it easier to do that.
Oh, okay.
Nothing fits in my ear.
Twitter has banned a baby poop video.
Video?
The malicious app, it was actually a malicious app. So this was a video that promised a hysterical response from a dog to a baby pooping in its diapers. Was in fact a malicious app that gained access to users' Twitter feeds spamming links from a viral video website. It also had the ability to read your timelines and post tweets. Obviously, it has to ask you permission for that. But the New York Times literary critic Dwight Garner apparently has an interest in this. He got bit, as well as Britt Hume from Fox. Anybody clicking on the option to view the video at the time got an authentication request. Now it gets an error. So Twitter's blocked this. Be careful when you click something and it says, we'd like permission to access your Twitter account. Probably a good idea to say no.
I always say no to those, which means every now and then I miss out on like the hot Twitter app, but I'm just like, eh. And you know, you can go into Twitter and check and see what's still authorized to use your account.
Yes. In fact, do that every new year, go into Facebook, Twitter, Google, everywhere. Look what apps you've used. You may be surprised at the number of defunct apps like Storify that you have given permission to. Amazon.
Do it every season.
Yeah. Every season, every quarter.
3 months is
change your smoke alarm batteries and clean up your apps at the same time. That's in hygiene, yes.
There, if you ask your Amazon Echo to talk to Santa Claus will come. Ask what kind of Christmas music you're interested in listening to. You can ask what it will ask you, what do you want for Christmas? Is Santa real? Where does Santa live? How old is Santa? Sing me a Christmas carol. So there's also NORAD tracks Santa, which I always used to do with the kids to get them to go to bed early. Now you can just ask Echo, where's Santa now? Which I think is great. There's also a holiday song quiz if you can't get enough Christmas music. I suspect Stacey will be using all of these skills.
I have my Christmas playlists. If I have my turn on Christmas that my house looks, I would take you on a tour of my house.
Oh, that's so cool. You have a command, turn on Christmas, and it all just happens?
Yes. And I did a Vimeo video of it. So if you really want to, you could find it and see it.
What's your Vimeo account name?
I think it's Higginbob. Let's see. Didn't I show you guys this?
No.
No.
Really?
No.
Okay. Hold on. This can be turn.
See who finds it first.
Oh, what if it's gone?
I can't find Stacey Higginbotham on Vimeo.
Oh, I think it's under Higginbob.
Higgin B O B?
Uh-huh.
It turns out there's a Steve and a Ben and a Logan Higginbotham.
Oh, here we go. There's a Stacey Higginbotham on Vimeo. Hold on. I'm going to shoot you the link. Let me click it. Copy. Pause.
This is too sophisticated for me.
Okay.
Okay,
let's
Google.
See, Twig.
Say hi to Santa.
Sorry, I can't send messages yet.
Okay, no. Google. When is Santa Claus coming to my house?
My apologies. I don't understand.
Okay, Google, do you hate Christmas?
Sorry, I don't understand.
Hates, I hate you.
All right, I stuck it in my Stacey's thing.
Did you do the show me your hoo-ha's thing? Did you ever do that?
What?
No, I can't do it because it's not family friendly.
It's not friendly at all.
To anybody.
Oh.
But my wife showed me this. She said, did you know that you can ask, I think it was it Google or was it Echo? I think it was one of them. Show me your you-know-whats, and it does this whole dance. But then if you say show it a male part of the anatomy, it goes, I don't know what you're talking about.
Oofa.
So, yeah, and it still was not there.
Oi. Okay.
I know. I didn't cover this story, but I just, you know, it came up.
Did it come up?
Came up.
Or did you bring it up?
It brought it up. It came up in my mind. Higginbob, what is it?
There. So I found, I put it in there. So now you can see it.
Put it in if where? You
want. It's in the Stacey's thing. Because that felt like a logical place to put it.
Oh, there it is. This is you. This is your home.
Mm-hmm.
Well, let's save it for Stacey's thing. Would you like to use it as Stacey's thing?
Sure.
All right, save it.
I want to see a few stormtroopers invading.
Stormtroopers invading the Higginbotham home.
Oh, with the AR?
Yeah.
Excellent.
I could show you what I did. Because I did a couple. I think I did a couple. Here's our BB-8. A BB-8 invading.
You got BB-8 in your life.
That's really looks good.
It's pretty good, isn't it? What you look at is the how well it's matched to the tabletop, which is not perfect, but it does. Given it doesn't have, you know, tangle.
Does it do a shadow?
Yeah. Given that it doesn't have tabletop quality, tango quality sensors, that's not bad. Not bad at all. Not bad at all. I wish I could get the other ones playing.
You got BB-8 in your life.
But I can't for some reason. I don't know why. Wait a minute. Here's the one I just recorded. Let's see if that... No, see. Seems to be a problem with Google Photos. Let's take a break. And the number, the thing, the stuff will all happen momentarily. But first a word. Oh, this is your holiday gift. I'm telling you, I'm going to save you a lot of time for a family member, a friend, a colleague. The Ring Video Doorbell. Ring's mission is to make neighborhoods safer, your front porch safer, your home safer. 1 million people now. I feel like we deserve a little credit for this. Use the Ring Video Doorbell. I started using it a couple of years ago. I see it all over my neighborhood now. What it is a doorbell. It replaces your regular doorbell, but it puts a camera, high-def camera, a speaker, a microphone, motion sensor, on your doorbell. When somebody rings your doorbell, it rings your phone wherever you are. You can see video. You can talk to the person at your door. In fact, you can set it up so it notifies you even if somebody walks down the path. You can have your Amazon Echo show you what's at your front door. You can answer your doorbell from your Amazon Echo show or from your phone. Two-way audio. See and speak to visitors. And now they have the Ring Floodlight Cam, kind of the same technology, but it goes around your house. It has a big LED floodlight that lights up when somebody, you know, moves in your area. And it has attached to it, of course, the same camera and speaker and microphone. It's got one more thing, though, 110 decibel alarm, which you can set off from your phone if the people, you know, you can say, hey, you, get out of my yard. And if the raccoons don't leave, you press the button, the alarm goes off, they go running. When things go bump in the night, you don't have to guess. You can see from your bed or from across the world, whether you're at home or away. Ring Floodlight Cams offer the ultimate in home security. High visibility floodlights, a powerful HD camera, and it puts your security in your hands. Named the Wall Street Journal's best of CES 2017. So now we got a Ring of Security kit that includes a Ring Video Doorbell and your choice of 1, 2, or even 3 floodlight cams. Surround your home with security and save up to $150. Connect your Ring Video Doorbell with your favorite smart locks and hubs for added convenience, monitoring, and safety. With Ring, you're always home. It's like caller ID for your house. Save up to $150 on a Ring of Security kit when you go to ring.com/twig. ring.com/twig. And we thank Ring for their support of This Week in Google. Now, it's time for Stacy's house. So okay. Set us up. How did you wire this all together?
Oh, that is easy. I feel like at some point in time, I think I did a story about it. But basically, what this is about 6 or 7 smart plugs, both outdoors. I've used the Jasco Z-Wave ones, but now there's actually credible Wi-Fi ones that you could use. So each one of those is about $35 to $45, depending on which one you get. And then inside, I used mostly Wemo switches, but occasional SmartThings switches. And you just create a group called Christmas, and voila. And this is going to trigger your Madam A, just okay. So you know.
Alexa, that's all right.
Turn on Christmas. Okay. Play holiday music.
Holiday classics on
Christmas. Your house is very Christmassy.
Yes. Classy at the same time.
Wow, you...
Turn off downstairs lights.
Oh, my God. It's festive. Festive, festive, festive. And my favorite Christmas song, even.
Yeah, I didn't plan that part.
I like how you say it.
To 50%.
Yeah, if I were a scholar, I would do as told. You're just no nonsense, Stacey.
That is really nice. You have really automated this thing.
Turn off downstairs.
We're going to bloop all those A words. Don't worry. My mom has a new... my mom was on iOS Today yesterday, and I told her she couldn't use the A word, so she says, hoo-hoo. She goes, hoo-hoo. I know. I love it. Hoo-hoo. Turn on the lights. It's awesome.
I have a vision that Stacey's daughter is going to someday write an amusing New Yorker short story about my mom who automated our home.
Oh, yeah.
So my Christmas episode of the show, actually, that we pre-recorded a couple days ago, is my family talking about what it's like to live in a smart home.
Oh, really?
So we do it every year.
Do they like it?
Parts of it. My daughter hates smart things. This is the year she talked about capitulating on Madam A. So she finally accepted that into her life.
Mr. Jeff Jarvis, your number of the week, my friend.
So I'm going to see if you know about this. You probably are way ahead of me on this. I didn't realize this. Did you know that Tasty, the BuzzFeed food site, is selling a cooktop?
No,
oh,
I did not.
Yeah, oh, Stacy did.
You've eaten from it.
Yeah, the Tasty I've one. Had a tasty meal.
I knew nothing about this.
I actually like Tasty. It's the one that it's, what's his name? Zay Frank, right? He's the guy who created this whole format, which now everybody copies, right. Even the Food Network, of like the top-down, sped-up, how-you-make-stuff video.
So now you can connect the app to the cooktop.
Oh, I might
And the cooktop
this.
Will recognize... Oh, this is for you. It's only $149 too.
Is it an invection?
It's induction. Induction, right?
I want to say invection.
It does sous vide.
Invective-powered top.
Slow cook, and it connects the app and the recipe in the app to
it does
the cooktop.
Sous vide?
2 years ago, Tasty started with the mission of connecting
the world
with
food.
Today, with the launch of our Tasty One Top, we're making it easier than
ever. You can really tell that they're appealing to millennials here. Wow.
At first glance, it may look like just an...
My son will probably order this.
The One Top is the most versatile appliance we've ever used.
This came out any additional equipment, you like in February. Speed,
pan fry, slow cook, pretty much anything.
Oh, wow.
You don't need anything else except for the...
I just didn't know it existed.
All of this is made possible thanks to technology that we here at Tasty...
So that's a new Jonah Peretti monetization
and it
strategy.
Was also because Quirky, the founder of Quirky, works there now on the products. And they have this connection to GE appliances, and it all came together.
Does GE make this? Do they even have a Tasty thermometer?
Well, you have to have the thermometer to talk to the induction pan to talk to. Yeah,
that's pretty cool.
It is pretty cool. It's very similar than the June oven.
Yeah,
it's very similar in idea, except there's no AI, so you've got to trust. But the thermometer, there's weights in it, and it controls the temperature just like the oven. So. And it knows what you're cooking based on the app.
You know what I used the other day is the Meter Bluetooth thermometer. Have you ever seen that one? That actually worked quite well.
I have.
Yeah, I like the Meter a lot. And you can put it in the oven. And it because it has two ends, it has an end that gives you the ambient temperature, like the oven temperature, and an end that tells you what the meat is. It worked quite well. I was really impressed with that. That's M-E-A-T-E-R. We had a food technology segment on the new Screensavers. That was one of the
products. What?
I know. We didn't invite you. I know. I would have invited Mr. Tasty's cooktop if I had known.
Yeah.
Oh.
So you don't have this, though.
I do not. I didn't need it because...
I like it, though. You could do slow cooking with it. That's really interesting.
Yeah, I found this fascinating.
Oh, you could do shabu-shabu with it. Because you can.
And note the features in the bottom.
Yeah.
The bottom right feature.
Bottom right feature. Pentagon-shaped because Instagram. It's made for Instagramming. Wow. And it has a tasty app. It's an engineered crystal glass surface, integrated surface sensor, tracks the surface temperature of your pots and pans, capacitive touch, thermometer. That's key. So if you were sous-viding, you'd put the thermometer in the water bath. And that's actually pretty impressive.
Starts shipping in December.
Oh, it's not out yet.
It starts shipping this month.
I'm ordering it. I'm ordering it right now.
I thought they had a trial run because they launched this. I think they launched it like last year.
Ew, I'm not really getting baby blue. That's disgusting. Wait a minute.
Baby blue is cute.
We should. Well, that's for you then. One thing we should note that you do need with inductive cooktops is pans that are magnetic. So you could put a magnet on your pan.
Do you already have an inductive cooktop?
If it sticks to your pan. I do. I bought a one just to test my pans and none of them work.
Right.
So I'd have to get all new cookware.
We had to buy all the cookware for ours, yeah.
Do you have one? Do you like it?
This. We have inductive. Oh, yeah. My wife.
Well, I have a gas cooktop, and I'm thinking of replacing it. But I like gas a lot. And I know Stacey has.
Well, we read in the kitchen. She's
me. I have gas.
Oh, you
I
do have
a gas cooktop. The Tasty one was announced in July.
Okay.
So. This actually is a good idea. I just don't have any room on my counter for even one more thing.
So I want a new feature. Every week we should figure out a way to get Leo to buy something.
That's already been done on Mac Break Weekly. Every day, every week. All right. I had a pick of the week and I've forgotten what it was. Oh, well, I have actually done already the Google Home Max, the new camera app.
Yeah, that's true.
You camera apps, that, but yeah. I will throw in, which we didn't get to, Silicon Valley's worst apologies of 2017. This is Melanie Ehrenkranz writing at Gizmodo. And, you know, when she puts it all together like this, there were a lot of apologies. Jack Dorsey at Twitter, Robert Scoble, Mark Zuckerberg, Uber, over and over and over. Google. I mean, it was apology palooza. How do you like that word? Is that better than experiments? She hung up on me.
One more time you say experiments. That was it. One more time.
All right. Time for queso for Stacy. Time for you and me to say goodnight, Mr. Jeff Jarvis. You'll find Jeff at the city. It was fun. I'm sorry. I hope we didn't get in too big a fight over that. Thank you for joining us. BuzzMachine.com, City University of New York. I love our Socratic dialogues. Thank you.
That's what we're here for.
Appreciate you joining us all year long. We'll be back one more time. Our penultimate show. This is our penultimate show of the week, of the year. We'll be back next time, and then we'll call it quits till 2018. I hope I will see you then. Thank you, Jeffrey. Oh, Stacy called back. I apologize. I apologize for apology palooza. Just add mine to the list.
I was so sick of apologies.
Stacy on IoT.com is the place to go for both her newsletter and her fabulous podcast with Mr. Kevin Toefel. And we will see you next week for our last show of 2017.
Yes.
Can't wait. I hope we'll see all of you, too. We do this show every Wednesday afternoon, 1:30 Pacific, 4:30 Eastern, 2130 UTC. Please stop by and join us live at twit.tv/live. If you do that, also hang in the chat room because there are nice people in there, and it's a lot of fun. IRC.twit.tv. You can kibitz from the back of the class. You can also, if you're going to be in studio, come and visit and sit with us. But we do ask now, for security reasons, for safety, I want my staff to be safe, that you email us. So we still have an open studio policy, but maybe it was a little too open. So we don't want people wandering in. So if you don't email tickets at twit.tv, I can't guarantee you a place at the table. But it's an easy thing
did,
to do.
I did just wander in. I mean, and it was I was pretty sketchy.
Yeah.
And look what he did to you. Look what he did to you. He gave you the world's worst queso.
Yeah.
See, that'll teach you.
Well, that is true.
Yeah.
What was I thinking?
You might get tased. You might get bad queso. You don't know. So please email tickets at twit.tv, and we will love to have you in studio. We certainly do. You don't have to watch on demand or come in studio to see the show. You watch live or come to the studio to see the show. You can go on demand. I'm all confused. I'm all confused. But go to our website for all the shows, audio and video available for download at twit.tv, in this case, twit.tv/twig. Or get your favorite podcast program and subscribe. That's probably the best thing to do. That way you'll get every episode. This was a very interesting show. I really enjoyed it. Thank you for the good conversation. And we'll
as always,
we'll adjourn, but we shall reconvene next week for further experiments and apologetpaloozas.
Oh,
thanks for joining us. We'll see you next time on Twig.